Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Good back. Mercedes takes off for second. The pitch gets away. Here comes Abreu. He will score. White Sox win. They win it. The Royals will challenge the call at the plate. It was close. Headsets are still on. Both teams at their respective dugouts. Many White Sox players are standing outside the dugout, and the call stands! White Sox win. The Royals over in their dugout can't believe it. The final score, the White Sox 4, the Royals 3. We got to take a breath.
Pretty crazy ending. It was bang, bang. I think if they had called him out, they would have stuck with that call. But the umpire right there called him safe.
Oh.
And then they went back, and it was, did he touch him? Did he get him? I can't tell. Game over.
Cap, that was just so ridiculously close. No idea, but I'm glad it was Abreu that's the guy that slid in, because he's been the story all the entire series against Kansas City. Very happy to see the White Sox win that game.
Chuck Garfine is our White Sox insider. He's a star at NBC Sports Chicago, and he and Ozzie and Big Frank pre-post are much must watch. Chuck, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'll tell you this, the way I'm feeling right now, I don't always love replay, but this morning, I love replay.
That was amazing, man.
Yeah, your initial reaction to that, Chuck, when you first saw it, safe or out in your mind?
Well, I mean, initial reaction was, I don't know. And then I saw the replay, I should say actually replays, because there were a couple of replays where you're like, oh, he's out. But then there was this one where it's like, it literally looks like he somehow, some way, magically slid by the tag. And so I agree with you. If the call on the field had been that he was out, that would have been tough to overturn. So I get what replay is kind of doing there back in New York. But, I mean, it's insane. Like you said, the bookend of this weekend, the bookends, it was Jose Abreu. First game, I mean, you couldn't write a better script. First game of this doubleheader, he has that awful collision with Hunter Dozier, knocked out of the game. He says he wants to come back for game two. La Russa's like, no, that's not happening. Then the next day, he comes back. I mean, meanwhile, Hunter Dozier is on the 7-day concussion list, and he hits the home run on Saturday, and then Sunday races home to give the team the win. I mean, I've never seen, honestly, Jose Abreu more excited than when the replay ruling went in his favor and the Sox won the game. He's in the dugout going crazy. It was a glorious ending to the weekend for Jose Abreu and the White Sox.
Chuck, I'd like to know if you, like my partner, are in a cold sweat because, oh, my God, the Twins are on the schedule again. Are you terrified again?
That's not. First of all, Chuck, before you answer that, do not mischaracterize me. You're going to have to learn what satire is. You've only been working with me since August and know me for 20 years.
I'm kidding.
No, you really believe that Chuck and I are huddled, scared to death of the Twins.
Wouldn't shock me, but I don't think you are. Chuck, are you still terrified of the Twins?
This is a North Side interpretation of White Sox angst.
Oh, no.
That's
wow.
What this is.
Oh, here we go.
I heard it from Sylvie. I'm hearing it from you, Cap. You guys need to, like, get a grip on really what's going on there. I think it's a little jealousy. I think it's a little Cubs fan jealousy. You wish you had a series to look forward to like this. And you're rubbing it in our faces.
Oh, yeah, John Lester on the hill tonight at Wrigley. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so, well, what I'm talking about is, well, yeah, go ahead and relive your 2016 days. Okay, what I'm talking about.
It's a high school reunion for the Cubs tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a thing. I'll admit, I had something about last week's series with the Twins just because, listen, the White Sox have been playing great, and I'm just still stunned that the Twins are where they are in the standings. And I think it's only a matter of time before they wake up. I did not want that to be last week against the White Sox, because I've seen this time and time again over the years. This is no reflection on who I think the White Sox are going to be and who they are this year. It's more of like, I mean, I've got it in my soul that the Twins wake up and they usually take it to the Sox. If not last week, it's at some point. It could happen this week, but I certainly feel better about the White Sox that they, you know, this team faced the team that won the division last year and they swept them. So even if the Sox lose 2 out of 3 in this series, I just know that they've already shown against the Twins that they can face them and beat them into submission if necessary, and that's what they did last week.
I'm scared to death. So let's talk a little bit about Moncada. Help me out, Chuck, with Moncada. Okay, so I don't mind him being in the lineup every day. I think he plays a pretty good third base. I just wonder about his instincts sometimes. Like, for instance, you know, the other night on Saturday night, going down the first baseline, sliding into first, that's always not a good idea. You don't want to get injured. We have enough Sox players that are injured. I wonder about his instincts defensively at times, too. Could you give me the good and the questionable about Moncada as a player?
All right, so I'll flip this on you a little bit.
Okay.
So instincts, okay, I hear what you're saying. I think he actually has pretty good instincts. The thing that that's actually impressed me about Moncada in the two plays that you mentioned is motivation. Will to win, this, you know, steal a Hawk Harrelson phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could watch Moncada sometimes and look at his body language and you have to wonder, like, does he really want it? I mean, how much does he want it? I know he wants to win, but how much does he want to win? When I see him, you can question his decision to dive into first base. It's a bad move, but he really wanted that base. He really wanted to keep the inning alive. And then in the ninth inning, he blows through a stop sign from third base coach Joe McEwing to score. Why does he do it? He really wants to win. So you could question his instincts, but what I'm seeing, what it's revealing to me is he's inside him, because you can't measure that, the heart thing. You can't always measure it. You just only look at it. There's no sabermetrician who can tell you that. I'm seeing a guy who really wants to win this year, and that's what I'm taking from those two plays.
So as you watch this team play, Hoodie and I were talking about, you know, you hope that you get Robert back. You hope you get Jimenez back. But I got to tell you, man, this team looks, with two huge pieces out, this team's really freaking good. Really, really solid. And I still think there'll be an addition, because you don't know what those guys would give you in September. I still think Rick's going to add another piece. Do you?
As we sit here right now, I would say yes. The only thing is that where things are today might change and probably will change in July. And what I mean by that is, I think what's going to happen, this is my guess, I mean, assuming everyone else stays healthy, they're going to reach, say, the middle of July. They're going to see where they're at in the standings. And they're also, I'd like to think, they're going to have a better idea about Jimenez and Robert and what the chances are that they could come back and when they'd be able to come back. I think that's going to weigh into what they do and when they do it. And it's if it's not clear that Jimenez and or Robert are going to be back, if not in time or say by September or at all, I think that will then weigh more into the decision about who they get and how big of a player they get. That's just my feeling, because you don't want to force it. But at the same time, what I keep going back to is, say this is a five-year window. 2021 is 20% of the five-year window. So, you know, yeah, you might not know about Jimenez and Robert, but if you know this team has a chance to win the World Series, you're going to do everything in your power to make it happen. So I think right now you're not going to see any kind of big trade, but come July, I think the optics of everything will be different in terms of what they have internally, where they're at, and what they could potentially add externally, and they'll take it from there.
Chuck, we started the show this morning talking about Justin Fields and whether or not Justin Fields will be ready to start for the Bears day one. Will it be week eight? We don't know, but there's a lot of excitement around the new quarterback for the Bears. And so this relates to Michael Kopech in some ways, too. We got a glimpse again against the Royals. Four innings pitched, two hits, one earned run, and five strikeouts. So when do you think will be the time for Kopech to be able to be an everyday starter? Do you expect that to happen next season based on his stuff?
You know, it's a big unknown. And I think it really comes down to, A, what did the Sox need? So say, assume everybody stays healthy. I don't know how they fit him into the rotation right now. I mean, think about it. Where are you going to put him? Are you going to have a six-man rotation? Well, that's a whole other topic, and I don't see that happening. I think he's more of a spot starter for the rest of this season and then see where things are at in August and September. I hope nobody goes down and you don't need him in the rotation. This is a great little chip that the White Sox have. And by the way, I want to throw this at you. You guys want to guess, in 41 innings, how many extra base hits Dylan Cease has given up this year?
I'm going to say
Don't cheat.
Say it.
Four.
I thought you were going to say five. I'm going to go five.
Now, you guys are going four or five. That is a very, very low number. In fact, it is four. It is the lowest in the major leagues. I'm shocked that you guys said that. You guys have been watching. David Kaplan watching some White Sox baseball. I'm impressed.
I don't miss a pitch. I watch both games.
Uh-huh. I'm having fun with you.
Yes. And who is the one on this show? Well, I can't speak for Hoodie because I haven't asked him. I live bet the White Sox in the eighth inning yesterday. Coming back.
I did not do that.
Plus
wow.
120. Take that.
No, you see, Chuck, I'm that pure fan, just watching the game. No,
well, how does that pay out? How does that pay out, Cap?
So I bet 100 to win 120. So they
a big return for a live bet down one. I think it would be more.
Yeah, I mean, I started with 100, now I got 220 in my account. There you go.
I guess you're right. Good point.
Chuck, I have something more valuable for the victory. I got a win. That was valuable to me.
Yes.
It's more than 20 bucks.
To go 1-3 in the series against the Royals, you'd have been ticked off this morning.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the Royals came in on an 11-game losing streak. So, I've been praising the Royals, you know, ever since they started making these moves. I mean, Carlos Santana, I love that signing by them. I think Mike Minor is pretty good, and they traded for Andrew Benintendi. I like that team. I think they're going to be a 500 team. So them losing 11 games in a row, coming, I'm like, you know, for the Sox to, like, sweep them or take three or four, I just felt like the odds were in the favor of the Royals to start turning things around. So, I don't know. If they got the split, I'll take it. Now we got three games with the Twins. Jay Hood, I mean, I might be in your position come game time, but right now I'm feeling better about the White Sox-Twins thing after the sweep last week.
Chuck, we got a roll. We got Matt Nagy coming up. So one all-star to the next. Have a great one, man.
All right. See you guys.
Appreciate you. There he is, the great Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago and ESPN 1000.
You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and Jay Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
So, again, we talked to Matt Nagy for quite a while. Really enjoyed that. I think he had a good time. You could tell he was relaxed. He was a little Waffle House action.
He was into the Waffle House.
He was.
And so is Daz Newsom. He is the new Tim Anderson.
Right.
Because Tim, when he first got here, is like, where's y'all Waffle House? Like, Tim, there's no Waffle House.
Don't have those here.
It's like, why don't you have one on 35th?
Right.
You and Kenny Williams, I told him my first interview with them, you and Kenny Williams, you build yourself a Waffle House on 35th and Vec.
Yeah, right there.
Just do it in that area. It'll be, it's
sensational.
Oh, man, it'll be a million dollar operation. 24 hours a day. But so that's what Daz Newsom wants. That's what Matt Nagy wants. He likes to take that drive if he could.
He does. So Jeff Dickerson joins us now. He is our Bears insider. JD, good morning. So you heard what Matt had to say. Do you believe it that he will truly know when Justin Fields is ready and give him the chance in camp?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone is going to know. And that's the thing about the NFL. Players know when other players can play. I mean, it's very simple. Now, I'll go back to 2017, not to beat up Mitch or anything, but the reality is they knew that Trubisky, as limited as he was going to be, was going to give them a better chance to win and was a better player than Mike Glennon after 4 weeks of the regular season, and they had to make the move. I'm not saying let's throw anyone a parade for that or anything, but I mean, that's just how it goes. If a guy is that much better, it's the NFL. He has to play. Now, the situation here, though, is much different because they do believe that Andy Dalton can, or they hope, can sort of hold down the fort for a little while until Justin Fields is truly ready. But, guys, if we get this the summer, and again, this offseason program is kind of goofy because you saw they kind of trimmed down some OTAs and, you know, what work that Justin Fields will get between now and the veteran mandatory minicamp remains to be seen. But let's say we get to training camp, and for 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, Justin Fields is just light years ahead of the other two quarterbacks. Everyone's going to see that. Everyone's going to know that. If he's ready, he's ready. He plays. I don't believe they think that is going to be how it unfolds, though. I think they feel like it will take him a little bit, and that's why they are committed to Dalton for the time being. But when Fields is ready, guys, he's going to be the quarterback.
So let's talk about the running game, too, with Tariq Cohen returning. Every time we saw Cordell Patterson, JD, it was kind of like, okay, those are supposed to be Tariq Cohen plays. So Cohen's there, Montgomery's there. You heard Nagy talking about the emphasis of running the football. So how do you look at the offense? Do you believe that Nagy will, based on what we saw at the end of the season, acquiesce to the running game some?
Well, I never really know about the running game sometimes because every time you think that this is the perfect week to buy into the running game, it doesn't happen. I do think that David Montgomery, though, is going to enter a very important year in his career. You know, he's going to want to get paid here. He had a very good season last year. I think the Bears believe he can be even better, and he has motivation, obviously, you know, going into the season he's going into. So, I mean, I think on paper – they have every motivation, Jonathan, wouldn't you say, to mix in the run quite efficiently and run the football? Mm-hmm. It just hasn't materialized sometimes in games. So I want to believe that that's going to be the case, but we're going to have to really kind of see it in order to believe it. But when I look at the offense, and you would ask me, you know, what are the strengths of this offense? Jonathan, the first position group that comes to my mind would be running back, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You got three guys.
You got three guys. Mm-hmm. You got question marks at wide receiver.
Right.
At tight end. I mean, you think Cole Kmet in year two will make some improvements. You know, Jimmy Graham had an okay year last year, caught a lot of touchdowns, but I think we all know that he is obviously in the twilight of his career. On the offensive line, you've got two new starting, possibly offensive tackles. One of them will be Tevin Jenkins, likely on the left side. That's where he was working this weekend at rookie minicamp. So, I mean, there are question marks all over the place. At quarterback, you've got Dalton. Will it be Fields? But at running back, you have got some quality guys. You made some good signing in the offseason. And I would say, again, that's one of your stronger points of your offense.
Jimmy Graham's going to make the football team, right?
Oh, yeah. He's going to make the football team.
Yeah, he'd be gone already.
Yeah, he already would have been let go.
No
yes.
doubt.
I'm just concerned about the salary cap. I just want to see how much more you can
They were,
off.
Too. That's why Leno's gone. I mean, they were up against it. And that opened up a little bit of money, but in terms of, you look around the NFL, the Bears are pretty tight against the cap right now.
So what's the next move that they could make? It's not going to be, as Hoodie just asked, about Jimmy Graham. They've already moved on Bobby Massey and Charles Leno. Is there another veteran that they could move on that wouldn't shock you that would give you more space?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can't get rid of Robert Quinn. That money is just on the books. That's guaranteed. I know there was some speculation about Akeem Hicks, certainly, because that's a big number. But, guys, how can you make any argument whatsoever that you're going to be better on defense without Akeem Hicks? Are you serious? Like, there's no way. So, I mean, I get it. Like, there were some tough decisions that had to be made. But right now, since they're kind of through that, I would say there's no way. He's got to be on the team because they want to win. Now, is there this, you know, incredible urgency that if they don't win 11 games or 12 games, everyone's fired? I don't feel that way. And I've told you guys this. I look at this as a two-year window. Okay, they've got 2 years to get Justin Fields ready to go, have him playing at a very, you know, high level. If they do that, I think everything else takes care of itself. If we get to year two, guys, if we get to 2022 and Fields, he'll be playing, but if he's not playing well and they're struggling, then I think everyone's jobs are going to be in jeopardy. But I don't sense that immediately. I think that is another reflection as to why they feel like they can take this sort of wait-and-see cautious approach to make sure they don't put Fields out there before he's ready.
At training camp, is this a battle between Nichols and Goldman at the nose, or is this Goldman's job now that he returns?
Well, I'd like to see, I mean, we got to see Goldman coming back from missing the year, and you understand why he did, because of COVID-19-related concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I think both guys will just play. I mean, I think Eddie Goldman, you know, that they missed him last year, no doubt. I think Bilal Nichols is a terrific player, and I think he's done a really good job. So I think, you know, it's a luxury. I think you got both those guys. I think both guys play a ton in their rotation. And but I think getting Eddie Goldman back and, you know, making sure that he's in good shape and the year off didn't do, you know, any sort of, you know, conditioning damage long term or anything, I think is very important. But I think that's a nice two interior to have there on your defensive line.
I just don't like the salary cap situation, Cap.
No, I get it.
I'm looking at this depth chart just kind of like, well, you know, Jeff, we just thought Iway Booneyway was just, you know, you're taking off a quarter or a dime off your salary cap. It's not good, man.
Well, I mean, they paid a lot of guys on defense, right?
Yeah.
Because the window, they thought the window was open to win. So you have a monster deal like Khalil Mack is on the books. You paid Eddie Jackson. You had to get rid of Kyle Fuller because that was one deal you couldn't handle. But, I mean, a lot of guys have been paid. Akeem Hicks got paid. Trevathan comes back. He gets paid. They're going to have to pay Roquan Smith eventually. You know, Allen Robinson's taken up a big chunk for the franchise tag on offense. Look, they have handed out money. Now it's time to win championships. They're not there yet. Now the hope is that they finally got the most important position right, where in a short period of time, they're going to really be in a position where they can compete and can be a legit contender for a championship. But right now, there's just a lot of money on the books and no titles to show for it, my friends.
Tevin Jenkins has been basically given the left tackle spot, even though he wasn't a full-time left tackle in college. He had played some games there. Is there a swing guy out there that they can get cheaply that they're bringing in going, just in case we could play that guy there? Because I don't know who else on the roster you're playing at left tackle then. Who is it?
I don't think so. So I don't believe that they would have wasted time putting him on the left side over the weekend if that wasn't the plan. I'm not trying to, like, give up the family secrets here or anything, but, I mean, obviously, when you release your starting left tackle and you move up to get this guy in the second round and you say that he can play either right or left, odds are he's going to be your left. They'll have a Fetty. They'll have Larry Borum. They'll have some other guys competing for the right side. No, Cap, I don't think that I think the plan is that he is going to play from day one. Again, like second-round picks traditionally play right away. I mean, even on the Bears, I know the draft record has been a bit spotty, if you want to say, in the first round. But as far as second-round picks, I mean, former second-round picks, I mean, James Daniels played pretty much right away. They tried to get Shaheen on the field, but that didn't work out so well. Cody Whitehair, you know, he played right away. Goldman played right away. You have to go back to an Eagle Ferguson, guys, to find out a second-round pick that didn't really get on the field immediately.
Yuck.
And maybe John Bostic played right away. Wow. Alshon Jeffrey played right away.
What about a Dan Bezine?
Dan Bezine, who the story goes there that he was they had to work on him for like 2 hours just to get him on the practice field at college. He was so banged up. But, hey, you know what? He was a second-round pick. Stephen Paya. Who had the great bench press at the combine was the second-round pick.
Who was the guy jumped out of the pool? Jerron Gilbert?
Jerron Gilbert jumped out of that pool, man, and that was about it. That's about all. Tillman was a great second-round pick. Tank Johnson. Mark Bradley, not so good. Daniel Manning, Devin Hester. How about those two second-round picks in 2006?
I like that. So I think your swing guys, Cap, would probably be, at this point, Mustafa and Bars. They're going to have to be versatile enough.
I think Mustafa starts at center.
Yeah, I think he starts at center.
And Whitehair goes what? Guard?
Guard, yeah. Yeah.
Daniels and Whitehair at your guards. Effetti at right tackle, unless Larry Borum beats him out. Tevin Jenkins at left. Lakavius Simmons will be the backup. And then you have Alex Bars as a swing guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. At some point, you might have to get someone else. The reason why we're in the weeds on the offensive line is because it's one of the things Nagy talked about, Jeff. Like, if you're going to run the football at all, if you're going to have play action, your offensive line has to work in concert. That's got to get right. Yeah. It's got to stay healthy as much as possible.
They again, and we talked about this last week, they do like the interior. I mean, I think that the moves this offseason kind of reflected that. The problem areas that they saw, they took the big circle and circled right tackle, left tackle, and now pretty much both those guys are gone. Also, I believe a John Roper, also a former second-round pick
John
for the Bears.
John Roper!
Wow.
Chicago! John Roper. That's good stuff there. Well, I can't help you, Cap, on the salary cap thing. I'm looking. I'm looking for cuts.
There's not a lot of flexibility
nope.
there.
Your guy Pacer just handing out contracts like government cheese. It was amazing. I mean, just big-time deals that hamstrung.
Especially on defense.
Yeah. I mean, in an offensive league.
Right. They thought, so, because that goes back to, they thought maybe we can win while Mitch is on his rookie deal. And they didn't.
And they did not. And that's why they made the move for Khalil Mack. Unfortunately, it did not happen. But they do have a second chance here, guys, to get it right with Justin Fields. And, oh, by the way, I know you talked to Nagy and everything, and he gave you the lowdown. Fields is the guy, Jonathan Capp, that we watched on Saturday at Ohio State the last 2 years. That was my impression from the weekend. He is
awfully good.
Well, everything is there. Now, can they take that? Can they harness that? And can they make him into a franchise quarterback in the NFL? Hey, they have to prove to everyone that can happen. But as far as, like, so Dal Loggins used to use this analogy with Mitch, and it was so ridiculous, right? He'd be like, Mitch has got every club in the bag, right, for golf. Now, that was not true.
Yes.
This guy really does have everything you need. Now, can he become a great professional quarterback? That's up to the Bears to turn him into that. But as far as, like, size, as far as, like, arm strength, you know what I mean, mobility, I mean, it's all there. I mean, there's no denying it. And I didn't go there expecting to see anything different because you watched him in college for 2 years at Ohio State, mm-hmm. one of the best programs in the country. That's why you take guys from these programs that have played in these big games against the best competition and done well. That usually translates to the NFL.
JD, thanks, man. Have a great day, okay?
All right, guys. Take care.
You're the man. There he is, Jeff Dickerson. All right, an all-time moment in the history of catfishing. All time. I mean awful. You're not going to believe it. Next.